Blog Talk Radio.
Russians are here, so.
Yeah. So yeah, why
right,
bother
right,
to worry about it?
30
yeah.
miles
yep.
off coast.
Yep. Yep. Donald John Trump will take care of it because he's a tough guy.
You know, yeah. Man, I'll tell you what a horrible mess is going on.
Yeah, you can't make it up. But seriously, I think that I'm hearing a certain amount of buzz that any governor's budget is a starting point for a debate about what's going to happen. I think a lot of this budget is my guess, purely guess, is a lot of it is dead on arrival. He shifts a lot of burdens onto municipalities who are going to push back. He's asking for $1.5 billion in labor savings from state employees, which wasn't particularly helpful. He basically, he's cutting the earned income tax credit for poorer workers. He wants to raise taxes on cigarettes. I think there's a permit, a gun permit fee increase. I mean, he basically seems to go after everybody but rich folks and corporations. His budget actually gives a tax cut to the insurance industry because he's worried about Aetna leaving. So I just think that I take it seriously, and there's going to be a spirited debate at the legislature, but I think a lot of pieces of this thing, may not see the light of day by the end of the session. But the shifting of the teacher pension certainly is catching a lot of people's focus.
Oh, that one. I was shocked. I was absolutely, when we read that Hartford would get, I'm looking at it here, Hartford would get $12.2 million, right, in education grants, but it would have to pick up $17.1 million in teacher pension costs, that it never had before.
Right.
I mean, so not only is it, thanks a lot, Malloy, right? Whoa,
well, and the legislature, though, because they've refused to do anything to relieve the property tax burden or our reliance on the property tax. So, to a certain degree, the governor's proposing ideas that the legislature, has generally not had the courage to. He's proposing ideas on issues that the legislature hasn't had the courage to confront.
We are going to have some kind of formula that's different from the one we have, but I think because
I agree with you.
Failing schools in Connecticut, we have schools that are crumbling. We have schools that where the teachers have to provide some of the supplies for kids. I mean, they're glad to buy them, but it's not right.
And you have wealthy towns like yours, like mine, you know, I live in Farmington. You have, you know, towns that are on this ruthless budget cutting spree, and they're cutting paraprofessionals. They're cutting, you know, art and music programs. They're cutting special education. You know, getting rid of support staff. And the whole problem is, again, because we have this Bass-Ackward system that relies on the property tax as the engine for revenue, that's a regressive tax. And again, I keep bringing it back to the fact that the legislature and the governors, Malloy included, have been historically afraid of asking rich people to pay their fair share. They've been historically afraid of closing some corporate tax loopholes. We're supporting the proposal, for example, Lila, to, you know, close the carried interest loophole that benefits hedge fund managers. It could raise $500 million for the state of Connecticut by making hedge fund managers in Connecticut actually pay. Their earnings would be based, calculated the way the rest of ours are on the income tax and not this special tax loophole that allows them to pay at a much lower rate. There's all kinds of revenue ideas out there. There's all kinds of options that don't involve having to cut workers' pay and benefits or the workers themselves. But unfortunately, there just isn't a lot of political will to do that.
I would like to see us have a state bank.
I think that is a great idea.
I don't know how many times I sent that to my representative about really wanting to investigate that would solve our financial problems here in Connecticut, but she wouldn't touch it.
Yeah, she finally, thank God, she resigned. She retired because she was useless.
In that area, she wouldn't even look at that. I was very disappointed. She said there would be no traction and no point in it. But I felt she should bring it up and put it out there. And, you know, people need to hear things a number of times before they adopt the idea.
Or at least have it explained to them, you know what I mean? They don't understand it, so they kind of give it up, you know. But she was...
Well, I guess they view it as some crazy socialistic thing without even understanding what it would actually do and how it would work.
When really it's a good business decision is what it is. Always owning your own business is a good business decision in a lot of ways.
Right.
And that's what it would be. The state would have that and wouldn't be paying huge interest rates on money borrowed. You'd be paying yourself back, which is the state. It would be owned by all the people. It just makes so much sense and would get us out of the hole that we're in. But, of course, if you're a politician and you've accepted huge campaign funds from banks, you're not going
right.
to support something like that. And I guess
that's the problem. Yeah,
yep.
You know, the banking, the insurance industries are very powerful. Hedge fund, you know, the hedge fund companies
yep.
like Bridgewater, that actually got state money, believe it or not, taxpayer money, makes very heavy contributions to politicians on both sides of the aisle, including the governor, who got a lot of money.
It's unbelievable.
From hedge funders. So these financial services and financial interests really dominate the discourse over at the Capitol, and it's pretty frightening. And, you know, and that's our problem in this state. We're getting back to, like, the, you know, the pension funds in the cities, the teachers' pensions, and the fact that programs are getting cut.
That's been going on for a long time. Many administrations didn't fund that pension fund.
They neglected, which I think is criminal.
Oh, yeah. And now it's probably not at the level that it should be, and what's going to happen? You know, the present teachers are going to, when they retire, I don't know what will happen to them. I mean, people are worried and concerned, and they should be. But the thing that upsets me is people like Malloy and other politicians that we have, they pandered because they feel they have to these large corporations, and they give them all these breaks, and they have no trouble just picking up and leaving when they feel like, well, this isn't working,
right.
And they go, like GE.
Right.
Or
I got to ask you, Larry. I want your opinion on this. What did you think of the of Chris Murphy and Richard Blumenthal sucking up to McMahon at the hearing. What did you think of that?
I was surprised. Let me say this in defense of Chris, because I thought he actually showed diplomacy and grace. I mean, he really kicked her butt in the election. He probably would have gained nothing by picking on her, and maybe he's trying to save some of his energy for fights that really matter, like, DeVos. So I'm not going to, unfortunately, the Senate is this, like, diplomatic body, and that's how they are. I wasn't surprised, let me put you that way.
After she destroyed Blumenthal, he still won, but, he was all for her,
Well, it's in politics, you never know which side they're going to be on,
And it's largely a love fest, and, they don't, Sanders is like an exception, and Elizabeth Warren, those people are, sort of exceptional in their willingness to confront these awful nominees who generally have, very few qualifications other than they hate the agency that they're going to be heading, which that seems to be the major criteria.
I was surprised that the
education
nominee made it, because I didn't think she was qualified, but
she's not qualified at all. She's qualified because she donated, millions and millions of dollars to Republican candidates, funded charter schools and, in Michigan, and hates public schools. So she's a perfect and logical choice for Trump to appoint. The problem is the Senate Republicans have no spine and didn't want to fight her. At least the Democrats were in unison in opposing DeVos, but the Republican Party has absolutely no guts, no courage, no spine, and they don't want to fight Trump on anything. So, as long as they have the majority in Congress, these nominees, including the Supreme Court.
God, half of them, three quarters of them voted against Trump. The Republican Party.
They didn't support him.
No.
The traditional Republicans didn't anyway.
They didn't support his nomination. They didn't support him, and they all voted for Hillary. So it's like,
we don't know those numbers, actually. The people who sit in the U.S. Senate and U.S. Congress, I bet if you got to see how they actually voted, which we don't, they voted for Trump, is my guess.
You
they voted for Hillary.
John McCain, Sandra Lindsay, all the Bush family. All right.
But they're not, Leo, they're not sitting in the U.S. Senate. I'm talking about
Paul
the
Ryan,
people who sit in the Senate.
You don't.
They all voted against them.
You don't know.
First of all, you don't know that, and secondly, what if they did, Leo? Here's the problem: they are the leaders, the respective leaders of their chambers, and they are absolutely allowing the Trump agenda to go through unfettered, including these nominees. They want to gut Social Security. They want to gut environmental regulations. They are not standing up against his attacks on the financial reforms, limited though they were, that took place. I mean, they are rolling over for this guy, Leo. So even if they did vote for him, which for somebody else, which I don't believe they did, it doesn't matter. They are rolling over and letting this agenda go through because they see an opportunity in Trump to finally, weaken government and to go after the very institutions that have protected working people. So that's alarming. That's why you don't see them fighting any of these nominees. They're not going to fight the Supreme Court nominee, who's going to be horrible. So I'd be very alarmed. The fact that they may have opposed Trump publicly means nothing because they're not doing anything to fight him.
Well, you think Gorsuch, or whatever, you think he's bad?
He will be bad on labor and working people's issues, absolutely. He was also the... He was also the lead. He wrote the decision, decision on Hobby Lobby, and sided with Hobby Lobby.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that was a lousy decision too. But I don't feel comfortable with that at all. But
that's going to be rejected.
Yeah.
But again, I don't spare my criticism. My criticism isn't solely directed to Republicans, by the way. The Democrats, with their centrism, helped create this phenomenon. They made it possible for Trump to win, and they made it possible for McConnell and Ryan to hold sway. Nancy Pelosi looks like she's a joke.
Sad.
The Democrats have allowed this to happen. And that's what happens when you have a one party, you know, we have like a sort of a one party system that takes money from financial institutions and the powerful, and you get what you pay for.
I wanted to ask you, though, this. The stock market seems to be improving dramatically. And do you think that will create new business and more of an environment that will create more employment for people? Do you see that as a good sign?
I don't, because I think I worry that we're in the 1920s heading into the, you know, crash. I worry that the stock market is overinflated and that it's responding to sort of artificial external forces. Trump and the Republicans are not doing or showing a willingness to make any of the structural changes in the economy that will actually create jobs long term. They're doing a lot of showboating and a lot of politicking.
Well, what do you think is creating this uptick in the stock market? What I didn't really understand was the stock market is going up. Political scene is a mess, and I thought that usually affected the stock market, but doesn't seem to be related. So what do you think?
Because the stock market, my concern is that the stock market is, Wall Street is not an indicator of what's happening on Main Street. You know, and so my concern is, you know, people don't feel, talk to people who don't have health care or have adequate health care. They're pinched in the pocketbooks. People who are underemployed, they're pinched in the pocketbooks. People aren't feeling good about buying things. The fact that Wall Street is looking, you know, seeing something of an uptick doesn't mean that Main Street is. And if we were seeing, and you even see it in Connecticut, and that's why I say I try to be bipartisan in my criticism of politicians.
Yeah.
Malloy and legislature cut jobs. Connecticut's economy is very sluggish. And so the problem is that you've cut government, you're cutting government to the core, you're cutting services that people need. That's had a tremendously negative ripple effect. So the fact that, you know, like I say, you know, the hedge fund companies are doing well. You know, GE was doing well. They went to a higher tax state actually just to make more money for themselves. The insurance companies are doing well. There's a big difference between Wall Street doing well and Main Street doing well. And I don't see the indicators that Main Street's doing all that well. And that's what troubles me.
So you don't see that we're going to get the jobs that he's promising. I mean, he talked to the unions and seemed to, and I wasn't sure really which unions he talked to, Trump spoke to at the White House.
Yeah, so Trump made this, you know, he's a very good politician. He's a showboat. He knows what to do, but the building trades unions are being played for suckers. You know, first of all, they endorsed whatever, and listen, we can rehash how bad a candidate Hillary was, and I'm happy to do that. But the bottom line is those unions endorsed Hillary anyway. Why would Trump do anything for them? Second, and you know, more important, Trump in his business history, for example, has been to use overseas products and, you know, steel, metals forged in China. He's not going to, and he doesn't believe in project labor agreements, which the building trades are big on. So I see that as nothing more than like almost publicly embarrassing those unions. And then the other thing is, you know, he hasn't shown. Say that again, Leo. I'm sorry.
They seem to be very excited when they came out of the meeting.
They are, but I think they're being played. That's all. And I hope I'm proven wrong. I want to be proven wrong, but I think they were being played. I think that was a PR stunt. Because he does not need the building trades unions to push his agenda. And you know,
what do you think the new labor secretary now? There's a question. He's not going to be approved.
It's official. He's withdrawing.
He did withdraw.
Yeah. So Trump will just appoint somebody equally bad, somebody equally bad. You know, again, when you're appointing people or nominating people to dismantle the agencies, for which they've been nominated, I think, you know, that sends a message about what the president feels about government. And so,
no wonder he has so many leaks. People feel like they're going to work to get rid of their own job.
Yeah, there's
right.
There's two things. Did you think that what do you see? The 50% of the unions, is that's what I read here recently, is 50% of union families, members voted for Trump.
I know. And, you know, there's so much. Yeah, it surprised me and it disappointed me. And, you know, we have to do a lot of internal soul searching. AFSCME members, the exit polling from the AFL-CIO showed a, you know, slightly higher union turnout for Clinton than Trump, or union vote for Clinton and Trump, but it was a decrease over the union vote for Obama. So I think part of the problem, you know, there's disconnect obviously between what labor unions are fighting for and what their members perceive them to be fighting for. I also think that, you know, she was just, you know, not a great candidate.
She was a horrible candidate.
But I also feel like the great disconnect in the Democratic Party from the people that had originally voted for them.
Yep.
And the people that trusted them, and I think they lied to them and manipulated them.
Well, they became
aware of it, and they said, "We're not voting for you or people like you anymore."
I agree, and I think Trump just cynically exploited that. Like he has no intention of helping the common working person. I really don't believe he cares at all. He's a narcissistic, self-involved person with a lot of emotional maturity issues, which is like really scary to think that this guy's president. But putting all that aside, he just has never shown any concern or inclination to do something that helps lift, you know, the working people up. But he did, you know, to his credit, you know, perverse credit, but he exploited the anger. He exploited the anxiety and the mistrust that working people have for, you know, the Democratic Party and for politicians in general. So I think that's maybe that's what the number. And then you have like a candidate in Clinton who did like a terrible job. And, you know, lost states where you would think, you know, a pro-worker Democrat would win, like Michigan. I think I told you guys, I was concerned when Bernie kicked her butt in Michigan and then the party turned around and anointed Hillary. I thought that was like a really bad sign. And then Hillary turned around and lost Michigan. You know, there's no way Trump should be, his policies would lead to more factories closing, right? But, you know, there was a definite disconnect within the labor movement, but there's also, you know, the Democratic Party has been a little bit tone deaf about listening to what the concerns of people are.
Well, they disrespected the people that elected them, and people were aware of it.
Yeah,
and
that's a good way to put it.
To be aware that they don't think much of who you are, and they didn't care enough for your vote.
Yeah.
And that's what it was.
I totally agree with that.
And I think
that's a good observation.
Marked the end of the Democratic Party.
See, that's what's scary to me. That's what's scary to me is like, who is going to oppose, you know, Trump and McConnell and Ryan, right? Like, who? And Nancy Pelosi?
Elizabeth Warren. Warren, rather.
Oh, she looks crazy.
My God.
Oh, I don't know. There isn't really anybody. That's
right,
the
Democratic Party, you know, and they're a guy, whatever you think of them, they're people like Michael Moore. They've been out there, I think, saying some pretty good stuff, but, you know, they're not the mainstream, and people aren't listening to them. Politicians aren't listening to them.
Michael Moore, he's a sellout. He's been for years.
You think so?
Oh, they're horrible. I'll never forget the interview he did with Meg Ryan where he tried to come on to her, you know. He was the most sickening, you know.
That's gross. I mean, you know,
he just kind of like shivered at the thought of it and tried to get him off. But right. you know, He was one gross-looking guy. But the thing was, I just wanted to say that, you know, these guys, they've all put themselves in a position where now they just look like idiots.
They're not redeemable.
They're non-redeemable. Bill Maher.
Yeah. That's a scary thought.
I think we need a new party. And I also, you know, something interesting, Larry,
yes.
And maybe I don't know whether the people you know and you talk to feel this way too. People in my workplace are really sick and tired of being told by celebrities how they should vote. You know, fear acting, do that in your movies and your films. We don't want to see it on TV unless you pay for that time slot.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the way people feel now.
I
think that's why you didn't see Lady Gaga do anything at the football game, because I think...
Weren't you glad that she didn't do anything?
I was thrilled.
Very glad.
That she didn't say anything. Because
I don't think it helps the cause. I just don't think it helps the... You know, you have these, like, hyper-privileged people earning hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, the Republicans... Trump loves it when somebody like that, you know, speaks out. Because that's the elitism, you know, he's talking about.
I could have seen, like... you know, 10,000 people throwing a beer at her by that. Or whatever else, or rushing the stage
because half the people there are probably supporting one side and half the other. So no matter what she said, she would have been rushed.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm just glad that they didn't do that. But you know, I'm a little tired with that. I don't need to hear because you play football how you vote. Keep that to yourself.
Yeah. Right.
I'm not interested. Right. Play football and be done. Act in your movie. I mean, I think Meryl Streep is actress, but I don't need to hear her lecture me about politics.
By the way, did you get a chance did you watch the whole Super Bowl, or did you get a chance to watch
it? I did.
Did you stay the whole thing? Did you watch the whole
thing? Say that again? Oh, I did.
Lila and I gave up. We thought it was all over after the second half.
Now, I'm such a big football fan that, like, because it's the last. Look, I didn't think the Patriots would come back, and I didn't care which team won. It's just more that, you know, I watch the entire Super Bowl every year because it's the last game of the year. I feel like I should. And, man, they started coming back. And boy.
Yeah, last year was a nail biter, too. But this year they were up 3. I mean, my God, I never thought they'd come back, you know.
I think that's a great example of persistence and determination. I mean, I got to take a page out of their book. There are plenty of times in my life when I've been down, but it's so easy to become overwhelmed by being down and forget to fight back.
Yeah.
They didn't. I admire that tremendously.
No, that's where sports can be a good... you know, indicator or a good teacher for everybody else. But, you know, it's really interesting to see, like, now Trump is really, even the sports industry is, like, deeply divided. And it's particularly along racial lines, too. Like, a lot of the Patriots who are African-American do not want to go see Trump when he welcomes them at the White House. And a couple of the rednecks on the Chicago Cubs who won the World Series, Obama.
My feeling is, though, like that what happened in that football game is a good metaphor for union people.
And for union people,
that
I agree.
Even though we're down, maybe right now, we shouldn't lose our focus, and we should remember what our goals and objectives are, and continue to work toward them the best way we can. But remember, it's not really smart to, and this doesn't apply to you, but it applies to the higher ups in unions, which, you know, they jump on the bandwagon far too early and don't listen to what their members are saying. They really need to do that. They signed up the Hillary long before they should have. And they run focus groups and everything, but they'd already made up their mind. Not a good thing to do, because that's disrespectful of their membership. I had to say that.
I don't disagree with a word, and I hope some of our unions will learn that.
I hope
up
so, because I think it's really important to learn that for the future. I mean, for now, from now and going forward, you need to learn, listen to what your membership wants and what the,
right.
what they're looking for.
And I think we have
maybe,
to do politics differently, yeah.
I think so, and I think you ought to pick your candidate.
Larry, I want to thank you so much for being on today. We missed
it. Thanks
last
for
time.
Having me. This was fun. It's always good to talk to you guys.
No, I would have you on a little longer there if you can stay, but I know we've overstayed.
No, yeah, I appreciate it. We have a huge day at the legislature tomorrow, and I'm about to go write more testimony. So let's catch up hopefully next month.
Maybe next month, yeah.
Put your boxing gloves on. Be ready. Fight hard.
Good.
Yeah.
It's always a pleasure. I appreciate your support.
All right, guys. So take care.
Have a good night.
Thanks,
Larry. Thanks, Lila. Take care. See you, Leo.
Good night. That was Larry Dorman, coordinator for ASTRI Union Council for out of New Britain, Connecticut.
Yeah.
And fighting for you, fighting for
fighting for unions,
and if we can get better wages and stability, it helps everybody.
Yeah. And
my wish is that they would choose a candidate early from what their supporters want, and the higher up shouldn't just jump on a bandwagon. You know, I'm not sure that the Democratic Party's going to survive.
I don't think it will either, but you know, here's a really interesting thing. Back 20 years ago, when Bill Clinton was president, in his State of the Union, he said exactly what Donald Trump said in his, not State of the Union, but in his campaign, which was to get rid of the illegal problem, you know, in the United States and whatnot. And it's exactly what he said. I mean,
really?
Yeah, absolutely.
And never did it.
No. Well, no, they did some stuff, and he wanted to do it, but they never got it.
Couldn't get any traction for
no,
that.
No, so he said.
Large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more, by hiring a record number of new border guards,
exactly
by deporting twice as many criminal
right?
aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants. But we are also a nation of laws.
Even as we are a nation of immigrants, we're also a nation of laws.
This is Obama saying the same thing.
Undocumented workers broke our immigration laws.
So
I believe that they must be held accountable, especially those who may be dangerous. When I took office, I committed to fixing this broken immigration system.
And you didn't.
And I began by doing what I could to secure our borders. But today, our immigration system is broken. And everybody...
So what did he do? You know, what did he do? He gave a Dreamers Act. You know, he deported a lot of people. He deported more people than anybody, any other president.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he didn't do anything to secure the borders.
No.
And he said he allowed these sanctuary cities. And he allowed he gave amnesty to almost everybody. It was a crazy freaking guy. I mean, I don't understand
it. The amnesty cities that they got to stop.
That's it. And he allowed all this. And he kept going and going and going and going and going. And you know, so we're at the
additional
point.
Resources for our law enforcement personnel, so that they can stem the flow of illegal crossings and speed the return of those who do cross over.
So with all of that and everything, why are they saying no to Trump?
Well, just because they can.
Because Trump is you know, globalist, you know. Oh, before we end tonight, I wanted to say this because Fukushima radiation has contaminated the entire Pacific Ocean, and it's going to get worse, right? And
who wants to move to California?
No. And on top of that, another nightmare is that they call it the hellhole was right here. Americans.
The hellhole is Fukushima.
Yeah, Fukushima. I know, but it's right here. I posted it. There it is. Hellhole on Earth discovered at Fukushima. Okay, imagine. Not only is the entire Pacific Ocean
radiated
and irradiated by this Fukushima, but here, it's written just a couple of days ago by a Dr. Mark Serkis. Says most people think they have to die to go to hell, but that's not true anymore. How the hell do you get out of this?
I don't know.
It's just these pop-ups don't even pop out anymore. Okay. We have a hot spot on our planet that has never been imagined before, and in the face of the human technology is helpless. Hellhole on Earth discovered at Fukushima. At the levels of radiation now being found at Fukushima, a robot would be able to operate for less than 2 hours before it was destroyed. And Japan's National Institute of Radiological Sciences says medical professionals had never even thought about encountering this level of radiation in their work. The accident is enormous in its medical implications, and through future years too long to contemplate, we will witness an epidemic of cancer as people inhale the radioactive elements, eat radioactive vegetables, rice and meat, and drink radioactive meat and teas. Year by year, decade through relentless decade, the radiation will build up, yet modern medicine does not seem concerned. New readings at Fukushima have recorded the highest radiation levels since the triple core meltdown that occurred in 2011. Readings inside the container vessels of reactors number 2 are as high as 530 sieverts per hour, at dosage that would be fatal dozens and dozens of times over if a human were to be exposed to it. The previous high was still very fatal rate of 73 sieverts per hour.
The blazing radiation reading was taken near the entrance to the space just below the pressure vessel, which contains the reactor core. The highest radiations ever measured at Chernobyl were 300 sieverts per hour, an incomprehensibly high dose which can kill a man almost instantly. The new record at Fukushima is of 530 sieverts per hour, is 70% higher than that of Chernobyl.
This is 530 sieverts. Reading was recorded some distance from the melted fuel, so in reality it could be 10 times higher than recorded. And said
let's not read anymore. Let's go down to the next paragraph.
How come we do not hear more about Fukushima?
It was just recently said that it is not every day that the U.S. president calls journalists among the most dishonest human beings on Earth. This dishonesty is displayed in its full power with nuclear power issues, and specifically with Fukushima, where things are so bad, it is basically prohibited to talk about it openly in the press. In fact, as I was reading the essays on Yahoo about the record amount of radiation, the essays disappeared off the news summary list.
Wow. Most of this radiation is being washed out to sea, and it is quite quickly destroying the Pacific Ocean and much of the life in it. We have no idea how much of the radiation is escaping into the atmosphere, but we do know that during the first few weeks of the nuclear accident, because of the explosions, huge amounts of radiation were released into the atmosphere, and it circled around the globe, especially in the northern hemisphere. There is no way for anyone to say that having a point of output of radiation at 530 sieverts an hour is safe, or how many decades it will take for radioactive output of this magnitude to badly pollute our precious world. None of this is good news for our children. Anyone who says nuclear power is safe is lying, and anyone who says nuclear radiation is not dangerous is lying.
Researchers have discovered the existence of high-altitude radiation clouds that can expose airline passengers to high levels of radiation. These clouds were discovered as part of the NASA-funded automated radiation measurements for aerospace safety. It is widely known that radiation levels are generally higher in the upper atmosphere versus the ground, simply due to the higher levels of cosmic rays. However, when studying these levels of radiation, research has detected small pockets where radiation levels suddenly spiked up to double of normal level. These spikes could not be explained by normal sources of radiation like cosmic rays. Frequent flyers and first trimester fetuses may be at greater risk due to the longer exposure times or greater vulnerability. How come doctors don't say more about radiation dangers? Because they are among the primary users of nuclear radiation, using it for all kinds of dangerous tests. A single CAT scan of the chest is equal to about 350 standard chest x-rays. They are using radiation, a cause of cancer, to treat cancer, and that usually does not turn out too well. Because they are not honest with themselves, they cannot be honest with their patients, who should be told that many of the tests that are being given by doctors expose them to more dangerous radiation. Like global warming, vaccines, and now Islamic terrorism and immigration, there's no real discussion, no real science being sported in the news, so the public is left completely in the dark about radiation exposure. The people with the real power in the world insist that we will always see and define the situation as safe. No need to worry or do anything like drink lots of iodine, sodium bicarbonate, magnesium, and start off each day drinking a glass of ultra-pure edible clay. Edible clay is one of the most basic detoxification substances. It helps make sure absorbed radioactive particles pass through instead of into us. When was the last time you remember telling your doctor telling you to take magnesium or any of these other substances, or even sulfur, to reduce the risk that our exposure to increasing levels of radiation do not lead to cancer? Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, this article goes on, but the bottom line is...
It's really horrible. I mean, you know, it's just this article is incredibly important to read, and I suggest you do it. So, but there's so much going on, and we just want to thank Larry tonight. We started very late tonight and cut our show up, but we wanted to thank Larry for being with us and sharing his insights into what's going on with the unions and Trump and everybody else.
So,
and,
good night, folks, and I hope you have a good week.
Yeah, we hope you have a good week. We'll catch you next week. All right. Good night.